is time to put away the bias, the lies, and deceit and bring forth real talk from real people about real news. Providing the out loud truth and capturing the essence of a new generation all in a fast-paced hour. This is Viewpoint This Sunday.
Welcome to another Viewpoint This Sunday. This is Malcolm Outbound. Well, I couldn't have predicted this story last week if you asked me, friends. But the big story of the week, of course, is Kim Jong-un and Donald Trump. They call him Donald the Strong, Dennis always says in China. Well, Donald the Strong and Kim Jong-un will be meeting in this very, very interesting moment in time as the world looks on. Also, we are taking on today the sanctuary cities in California. We have a panel discussion, a fight sanctuary state. I'll tell you all about that here just a little bit later in the show. And also, we have, again, our typical deeper look round panel discussion. We're going to look at the possibility of another special counsel for the FISA abuse. Hard to believe that we're talking about that, but the Attorney General has said he's really considering this. The gun violence in Florida, the governor there has signed the bill, but the NRA is not happy, and there's a lawsuit already on this thing, which is pretty typical of what happens in these things. We'll take a look at that as well here. Let's get to the top of the show here, please, and welcome onto the show here. Dennis Santiago is here. He's a global risk and financial analyst. His subject matter expertise includes strategic warfare, asymmetric warfare, arms control, and global stability. Also, Ilana Friedman is here. She's a strategic counterterrorism intelligence analyst who focuses on the impact of terrorism and its threat to America and the West. Thank you both for being here on Viewpoint This Sunday. Well, listen, I don't think either of you would have predicted this if I asked you to do this last week when we spoke or the week before. But so I guess what's really on everybody's mind here is everyone is saying, okay, is this just another stall tactic from Kim Jong-un? Now, Ilana, when we look historically at the North Korea relations when it comes to this nuclear activity, it's been going on for a long time. It seems to be that
it's actually been going on since before 1985. And it's been a series of attempts at negotiations, then treaties and agreements, and then broken promises, and then in 1994, North Korea was going to withdraw from the non-proliferation treaty, and then with Clinton, they signed an agreement framework. It just goes on, and North Korea has never kept its promises, and the efforts of the West have been very weak. So you're dealing with a regime that essentially lies, makes promises it doesn't keep. We know that for the last at least 5, 6, 7 years, they have been actively engaged with Iran in the development of their nuclear program.
Right.
And in 2012, Iran began moving its own manufacturing operations for nuclear manufacturing from Iran to North Korea, to two facilities in North Korea that were very active in developing plutonium and also actually manufacturing nuclear bombs. So, you know, we're dealing with a very, very dangerous situation and a guy who may be certifiably nuts leading North Korea.
Is this a new turning point in this relationship? Is it possible that Kim Jong-un means business this time, or is this just a fairy tale?
Okay, so I have been puzzling on this one for, you know, days, trying to figure out what in the world is going on. Can we trust this guy? Why all of a sudden has he made this move? And this morning, I got a call from one of my colleagues. You introduced me as an intelligence analyst. That's what I do. I got a call from a colleague who told me that one of the primary reasons that Kim Jong-un has made this dramatic turnaround is because China, which provides them North Korea with dark money to underwrite their nuclear program, has threatened to withdraw all of the funding if they don't see. This is all related to Trump's threats against North Korea and the activity in a military activity in and around the neighborhood. China is getting nervous. They don't want North, and has been. We've appealed to China to help keep North Korea in line and get them into the position where they're willing to start thinking about dismantling their nuclear program. It didn't make sense to me until I heard this, that China has threatened to withdraw all of this money. And if that happens, North Korea's military will run out of funds in November.
Right,
and if
right.
that happens, then we're talking about the possibility of insurrection, coup, whatever.
All right. Well, listen.
Local unrest.
All right. So Kim Jong-un, there's only so much rope he has, very clearly. And even if, Dennis, even if they were get into a battle of war, I mean, if you look at really expert reports on this thing, I mean, most give him maybe 3 weeks before they would have no money, no supplies, no nothing, no food, no anything left. This is kind of a sticking point with this thing here. I mean, people are wondering, what is it that really brought Kim Jong-un to the table? Because if you look at this relationship last month when you and I were talking, Dennis, I mean, this wasn't even in the possible, well, I say that, but yet you and I did chat about what if. You actually wrote about it at one point, that there were some possibilities here. I think economically, looking at all of this, when you look at the oil, the gas, the food, the medical supplies, and all of these things, and we know what the quality of life is like in North Korea, clearly, has it got to such a serious point for them now? Because as Ilana mentions, with China, with Xi Jinping, what he has done working with Trump, that all seems to have taken place here and really impacted North Korea. Is that really the motivation as to what brings Kim Jong-un to the table? And can he be believed now?
I've been watching this thing for over a year now, and I'm not surprised by what's happening at all. As a matter of fact, I've been on board with pushing the agenda that we should be negotiating with North Korea to end the Korean War for quite a while now. And I think this is real. I believe that the efforts of the United States, which have been concerted and international in nature and inclusive of all of the international powers, including China and Russia, have begun to pay off. Mm-hmm. And we've got this guy now on the ropes all the way around. He's paying attention. And the other thing that I think that people don't take into account is that the two Koreas, North and South, want to make this work. They're tired of this 50-year-old war, not 75-year-old war at this point, hanging over their necks. They're ready to move forward too. And you know, that crack in the ice happened on a skating rink at the Winter Olympics.
Exactly.
So, yeah. You know, anybody that says this isn't real mm-hmm. isn't actually paying attention to the artifacts. You know, it's time to stop looking in the rearview mirror mm-hmm. and it's time to start looking forward.
Well, let me talk about that a moment, what you say, Dennis, as far as if there was to be a reunification of the Koreas a moment. Let's touch on that a moment. And let me have you start, then Ilana will chime in as well on this, because there's some interesting, pieces to this entire relationship and dilemma. When you say they're tired of it, the North and the South, if they were to come together like this, you know, what does it look like? I mean, you've got two governments really in power here. Forget the infrastructure connecting the two countries, which doesn't exist at this point, would have to be built out, would cost, you know, trillions of dollars. But let's talk about what that looks like. And how does that impact, again, China, which is right there, and Russia right there? China doesn't really, do you think China wants a reunified Korea?
Okay, so that's another aspect of this whole international picture that I've been looking at for a while, and it really interests me in that the reunification of the two Koreas mm-hmm. actually unhinges a lot of, it affects the entire western half of the Pacific Rim, mm-hmm. in that it will move basically every country from Russia in the north all the way down to, I would say, Australia in the south. To move towards some sort of new economic-based architecture for essentially the entire of Asia. Mm-hmm. And that's a possibility that people are only beginning to dawn in their minds at this point. Yeah, it's big. Korea has been a stabilizing factor for the architecture of the Cold War in that part of the world. Pulling that pin unhinges everything, and I think it's kind of an interesting thing to watch.
Yeah, you know, Ilana, it intrigues me the possibilities of North Korea if—and this is a big if—and I don't know what this new administration would look like with North and South. I mean, how do you do this with these two governments again? But it does intrigue the possibilities of growth in the North Korea market back to the economy and the markets, which, Dennis, you're alluding to. It would create tremendous opportunities. Those people in North Korea are just starving for some sort of a glimmer of hope. And many of them don't even know that it exists anymore because they've been behind that, you know, this wall for so long. They've been just hidden, and it's been a horrible situation, Ilana. What does it look like if there was to be if Kim Jong-un is serious, as Dennis is saying, and there is legit, China isn't going to like this, right?
Well, it depends what's motivating it. I'm a little more cynical than Dennis is, because in spite of the fact that the people of North Korea desperately want a unification with South Korea. Right. Many families are divided. And the people are starving. You said they were starving for a loaf of bread. Period.
Yeah, starving for a loaf of bread.
They don't have food in their mouths. It's horrible what's going on there. Yeah. And historically, the leadership is living, you know, the life of royalty with all the benefits of wealth. Mm-hmm. So, I'm cynical about Kim Jong-un wanting the unification. I think he's found himself between a rock and a hard place.
Exactly.
And he's getting pressure from the West, from the United States specifically, and it's hard pressure, it's sanctions, it's military activity, it's all kinds of, and threats, and downright threats. When Donald Trump says, we have a bigger nuclear button than you do, he wasn't joking. China is pressuring him from the Northwest, and their pressure is real because the sanctions from the West and the sanctions now from China are going to affect them very dramatically. He will not be able to pay his military. He will not be able to pay his government officials, that is going to be a major disruptor in North Korea, and it may be the downfall of Kim Jong-un, and I think that's what he's afraid of. So I think that more than anything else is what's motivating him rather than a great love of South Korea or anything else.
You notice that
he did not come to South Korea. He sent his sister. So,
He
also sent a general.
Right, but this was the Olympics.
He sent a lot of people. He sent a lot of people who were in the.
But you didn't expect him. Hold on.
They were masquerading as band people.
I don't think anybody expected Kim Jong Un to be at the Olympics. I don't agree with that.
But what I'm saying is that the figure that he sent was a person of tremendous power. I didn't mean that he should be going. We sent Pence.
Right.
But. What I'm getting at is that a lot of the people who showed up in this contingency were people who were involved in the Secret Service and were spies and so forth. And his sister is a very powerful person in North Korea. So I think that...
Well,
that
maybe for the moment, until they kill her. Until they kill her.
We said Ivanka.
He's conflicted. Yeah. What I'm getting at is he's conflicted, and he's under enormous pressure to give in to this... This new kind of overture to friendship, but I'm not sure that it's real, and I'm not sure he's going to stick with it.
Well, again, there's only so much rope he has, Ilana. So to your point a moment here, I mean, whether we're cynical or whether we're optimistic, if you look at all of this in plain daylight, he kind of doesn't have a lot of options, Ilana.
He doesn't, but he's not a rational thinker.
True.
And so, you know, if we expect him to function on the basis of logic, we're going to be fooling ourselves because that's not how he operates.
Yeah.
He operates from a position of great personal power and a kind of megalomania that we don't understand very well.
I think Donald Trump understands how that part of that guy's mind works. And that's our advantage in this negotiation.
I think there's a very unique opportunity here. And there is a possibility, Ilana, and just to, let me throw a little bit of optimism on your pessimistic thoughts there a moment here as an intelligence analyst here. Let me say this to you. Let me just put this out there, please. You have this. Kim Jong-un, he wants power and prestige. He wants to be on the world stage as a leader. He wants to be recognized as such. When you take a look at this man, and if you study him again in his body language and his actions, how he came into power from the family wanted him in power, the military really weren't sure about this kid. We weren't sure he'd be the leader at that moment of time when that happened. But here's a guy that's on the world stage. He's thrust into this thing. He does all these radical moves. He's an extremist. He's out there. He's isolating the country more, taking it in the wrong direction, we believe. Of course, he obviously thinks something different. There is a strong possibility at this point that once you have this big summit and meeting of the minds with Donald Trump and Kim Jong-un, that, you know, as radical and extreme as you think he may be, Ilana, there could be that Kim Jong-un likes this admiration and this spotlight, and the world is talking about him and his country and what are the possibilities, and maybe we get in there and we help them economically, which I know you're all about and supportive of, Dennis. Maybe we do some things for them. You know, you could find a whole nother Kim Jong-un here, back to that world. He may just come to the table and say, you know, I kind of like this program here. Maybe there's a new world for him, Ilana. So what do you say to that?
Well, I think you're right. I think there certainly are those possibilities, and if anyone can do this, Donald Trump can.
Wow.
But remember that he has invested all of his career to date in his nuclear program. And there is a tremendous amount of himself in this nuclear program. And what we're not addressing, but we should take into account, is the fact that there is Iran in this picture. And it's very much in the background. Nobody is taking Iran seriously or even discussing Iran. But Iran is there, and Iran is part of their nuclear program. So there are a lot of moving pieces in this discussion.
But
we can't oversimplify it.
Iran is also has become their worst liability as far as their nuclear program is concerned, because Iran is undergoing its own problems.
Right.
And, you know, they've got they've got demonstrations. They've overextended themselves in the Middle East. They're running out of money. And, I think Kim Jong-un is probably looking at that and going, and in his calculus, going, do I have a reliable ally in that old strategy at this point? And he's making calculations, too.
Exactly.
I think maybe he's smarter than we think.
Listen, last question. We're just about out of time here, but let me ask you, where is the best place to hold this meeting, Ilana? Where does it happen? Where does it happen?
It's going to happen in a third country, I absolutely believe, because I don't think either leader is feel secure enough to have it in the other country. I don't think Trump should be in North Korea, and I don't think Kim Jong-un would be comfortable in the United States.
I read a report on his team, Dennis, that said that he really would be scared to be in Washington. He literally is afraid they would put him in jail, which is, it's hard to believe. There's zero trust between these. There's no relationship. As I said the other day, there's no ambassador. We don't have formal ties to this.
Have nothing. I mean, Trump surprised everybody, because they were having, according to the news reports, they were having this meeting about Korea, and they were discussing the guy made an overture the day before, and Trump just kind of like says, yeah, I'll meet with him. And the entire White House apparatus, and the entire defense intelligence, he pivoted the entire United States foreign policy strategy with sentence.
He did. Here's my last thought to you, Dennis, Ilana, is this. I think if we send a contingent over the year of Tillerson, Mattis, and Dennis Rodman as a team, we could really come away and be successful. And let them set up. They'll create the ties and the connectivity back that we have long needed here to pull this off here. Well, I'll tell you, whatever's going to happen there, it is going to be fascinating and riveting to see this relationship. And you have to at least credit the president, although not all are doing that. But again, it seems to be, if this summit meeting comes off, it could be a game changer just the same here. Friends, we've seen one of the other biggest stories this week and the development that happened this week with sanctuary cities and the more so the sanctuary state of California and the attorney general going right into Sacramento. And he is suing the state of California. This we haven't been down this road before. This should be quite fascinating and interesting to see how this one plays out. We'll be right back with a discussion in just a moment here.
The America Out Loud Talk Radio app is on Android or Apple. It's the perfect way to listen in to the new generation of talk shows and hosts who are ready to inform and inspire.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
Attorney General Jeff Sessions, when he filed suit, he went right into the lion's den in Sacramento in federal court and against the state of California for infringement upon federal laws related to the immigration and interference of federal officers performing their duties. Of course, all this is related to immigration law. This is a significant story. It certainly impacts the country as a whole. We'll take that on next year. I would like you to welcome to the show here. Agnes Gibney is here, and she's an angel mom and one of the founders of Fight Sanctuary State. Well, the story behind this is in 2002, Agnes's only son, Ronald Da Silva, was murdered by a previously deported illegal alien. We've heard these stories before. They never end in a good way, friends. He was hit by a bullet intended for someone else in a drive-by shooting. Since Ronald's murder, Agnes has been heavily involved in, of course, advocating for the rights of victims of illegal alien crime, for border security, and in advocating against sanctuary policies. Also with us, Ben Berquam. He's a talk show host and activist with a big message. When the politicians become the very enemies that they took an oath to protect Americans from, it's time to fight back, he says. He's a spokesperson as well for the Fight Sanctuary State movement and speaks before the media and interested groups throughout the state of California. It is great to have both of you here. Governor Brown comes out and he says, look, we know the Trump administration is full of liars. The release records are public and there's nothing that stops any sheriff who runs the jails to working with ICE. There were a lot of choice words thrown back and forth here with General Sessions and Governor Brown and, of course, the Oakland Mayor Libby Schaaf, which we'll talk about a little bit after here. I want to start here, Agnes, and ask you. I mean, the most difficult question in all of this that people try to wrap their head around here, which is almost impossible, what is the end game? As a resident of California and someone who understands this fight, what's the end game for California? What do they gain from millions of illegals?
Well, there is no gain. The gain for the Democrats, because they get votes, and a loss for the California population that get victimized by these criminal illegal aliens. What is the gain? There is no gain. There is no gain for anybody except for them.
Yeah. But they continue to do it just the same. I mean, that's what I wonder. Ben, you know, you hear say, well, there is no gain. But then why do they do it? Why do they have these policies in place? I mean, listen, they've gone from sanctuary cities now to want a sanctuary state. They've gone right in the face of the federal government. They seem to be on the losing end of this argument. Why do they do it then, Ben?
Yeah, no, it's clear. I mean, what Agnes said, their gain is votes, and it's really votes and power. If you look at the left in our country today,
right,
everything boils down to those two things. Does it improve votes or power for the Democrat Party? And that's all they care about. They've gone to the point You talk about, I mean, it's gotten to the point, sedition at minimum, in my opinion, if not treason, if you look at the definition of treason, aiding and abetting our enemies. And that's what they're doing here. They're protecting people that have broken the law, broken our sovereignty, come into this country illegally, and then killed American citizens. These politicians are protecting them. You mentioned Libby Schaff, and she allowed 800 criminal illegal aliens to escape ICE by giving them advance warning.
It's
mind-blowing. And that,
yeah,
I mean, it is. It's criminal. Yeah. It's criminal. And then to hear their arguments that, oh, these poor little, we're separating families. You know, give me a freaking break. I care about the American citizen families,
exactly.
Not illegal aliens.
And that's what they're not doing, Ben. They're not. They seem to be prioritizing people who, criminals who have broken the law, which I really have a hard time understanding is why the residents of California don't stand up and say we've had enough. You know, wherever they fall on the political spectrum, I mean, the quality of life there. Now, Agnes, from what we see here in the rest of the country, we see the quality of life that's continually being reported on from the northern part of the state to the southern, that it is plummeting out there. Yeah, the homelessness population is increasing. The welfare state is being enlarged, and this doesn't provide a good quality of life. Why so radical? And why this governor and the politicians? Where are the residents in all this? Why don't they do an abrupt turn? And do you see that happening any time ahead, Agnes?
You know, I think so. I believe that since President Trump took office,
right,
and even through his candidacy, he brought to light all the corruption in government. And I think a lot of Americans are beginning to wake up and see what's going on. And still today, there are people that say, what is going on? Oh my gosh, I didn't even know that. People are beginning to wake up and see the lawlessness, the corruption,
wow,
the avalanche of lawlessness in the state of California by these liberal politicians.
Right.
So people are beginning to wake up. And the more we talk about it and the more we bring it to the forefront and bring light to it, like Mayor of Oakland, Libby Schaff,
mm-hmm,
this outraged many people. And,
oh,
you know, I truly believe she's going to be the very first example of what not to do, because I think the Trump administration and Jeff Sessions are going to come after her and probably slap her with a big lawsuit.
Well, they are looking at that right now, Agnes.
Yes.
They're looking at possible charges. And the Attorney General has said that. He's come right out and said that. Let's talk about that a minute, about the Oakland mayor who was so outspoken about this. And, you know, I got to tell you both, you know, from an outsider perspective, she certainly has the right last name, because it looks like she's given a shaft to the state of California very clearly. So she's got an appropriate name with her.
So the key for me in all of this is to expose the lie, expose them for what they are. And I believe that, as Agnes was saying, mm-hmm, the general public is starting to come around when they start seeing these examples, like the 6-year-old that was just killed by an illegal alien drunk driver. We just, mm-hmm, got the story on that. That, you know, it's just story after story after story that,
right,
hasn't been told. That once it starts being told, these politicians don't have a leg to stand on.
Well, that's what I'm wondering, Ben. And it seems to be, you know, what I see here is I think California is very potentially at a tipping point here where they're going to have,
yes,
to make some tough decisions. I think you both agree with that. And these next couple of elections are going to be key out there. The question is, I mean, how do you turn the tide? The Republicans do not seem to be very organized in the state, and they haven't been. And I don't know,
yeah,
how you change that paradigm.
That's a really good point. Yeah, so we've got a super majority in California. The Democrats really own everything.
Exactly.
We've got two problems. We've got a limp noodle, weak Republican party,
right,
in California that would rather play defense than offense, and that has to change.
But there's another thing as well. The state prison population. Now listen to this. 35% of the state prison population is composed of illegal felons. That's illegal. People who have broken the law and have committed serious crimes. And this is costing the state millions and millions of dollars for a state that's in the red. So when you look at all this, how does this factor in, Agnes? I mean, how does any of this factor in?
Well, this is the Democrats don't want to talk about that. I have been to many prisons where I have done presentations, and almost the big majority of them are Hispanics. I'm not saying they're here legally or illegally, but the majority are Hispanics.
Mm-hmm.
There is a problem. I think, like I said, President Trump brought a light to this issue. There is a huge problem in the state, and this idiocracy of saying, oh, we're separating families. Well, let me tell you what separating families are, is when I go to the cemetery and clean my son's marker and hug the grass because I have nobody to hug, but they can go across the border and visit their loved ones. And this is an outrage, and I think more people are beginning to open their eyes to this, because let me ask the audience, if you have one, two, or three kids, which one would you give to sacrifice at the hands of an illegal alien? Which one? Take a pick, your youngest one, your middle child, or the oldest child, or maybe even two, or maybe even all of them. When is this gonna happen? When is this gonna stop? This is not about being unsympathetic to criminal. To illegal aliens. I'm sure there's a lot of nice people amongst them. But go back to your country and do it legally, like my family did. That it took us 13 years to legally come to the United States. Follow our laws.
Yeah, Agnes, I've seen that in your backstory. Let's touch on that a moment here, because you initially come from what part of Europe again?
I was born in Budapest, Hungary.
Yeah, yeah, okay. And you, all those years, your family, but they came through, it was legal. You are the American dream, yeah?
I am. And the American dream, my son was sacrificed because my government did not protect. When I testified in Washington, D.C. against border, about border security, they came to me afterwards and said, Mrs. Gibney, I am so sorry, our country let you down. They sure did. Not just me, but many other angel moms and other families, and probably hundreds and thousands of others that we don't even know about, because the fact still is, illegal aliens are not reporting crime because they're afraid to go to the police to be under the radar.
Of course they are. Of course they
and
are.
They say that there is no crime in highly populated Hispanic community. That is a lie.
Well, you know what gets me about that statement, Agnes, and I hear that statement you just say a lot. It's a great point. Is I don't really think about this intellectually a minute. So you have people that have broken the law that are criminals themselves, that are illegal and criminal. How do you describe that, right, Agnes? I mean, and then these are the people that we're saying, like, okay, well, but the criminals haven't broken the law. How do you connect the dots on that thing? I don't get it, man. I mean, so the criminals haven't. So what the hell are we measuring the criminals for?
Well, and that's the thing. When we get to a place in our justice system where we get to start deciding what crimes we enforce and what crimes we don't enforce, or what laws we follow and what laws we don't. That's what gets me, is we've got a state government that has chosen to not follow federal immigration law. That would be like me saying, well, why should I follow state law if the state doesn't follow federal law? We've got lawlessness. And to make a point back to what do you do? What has to happen? I believe that this Fight Sanctuary State initiative, that fightsanctuarystate.com, is the critical piece to changing, to shifting that paradigm, for getting this message. If we can defeat this cancer, if we can kill this cancer of lawlessness in California, and I call it, you know, the left, their focus is on stealing the dreams from Americans to give them to criminal aliens. Trump's success and our success in this movement is about the American dreamers and restoring American dreamers. And I believe that as this story unfolds, you're going to see millions of people start to stand up. Now, whether or not we take back the state, you know, in the next midterms,
That doesn't look likely.
Right. But I believe we're going to see a shift where it starts, the pendulum finally starts coming back.
Well, that's the key to this, Ben, is that shift when the pendulum swings, as you say. And that's really what everybody is really looking at. Because quite frankly, as I talk to a lot of people around the country and the nation here, many of them have given up on the fact of California politics, which is what you're seeing here. And they believe it's so far gone that they almost have, they don't even bother anymore, which is what's happened now. So what you've got now is you've got a Republican Party that has really, as we just talked a moment ago, Ben, they've given up on the state. They're very disorganized out there. They don't have an action plan. So you really have a one-party system. So think about this, guys. You have a one-party system in the state that is that for whatever reason, intellectually, is they're focused on the decimation of the quality of life. And they seem to be doing everything that they can. You know, you mentioned votes. I asked you up front, I always try to bring it down to what's the big, big elephant in the room, the $35,000 point of why these politicians do this. And you mentioned votes, and you mentioned the Democratic Party to be in power. Of course, you wonder what the state is going to look like if they get the power and there's nothing left of quality living to the state. One of the things is the driver's licenses. From what we see, too, they've given millions of driver's licenses to illegals under the motor vehicle program there, which was revised. Point of this is that unless you specifically select, you have to monitor yourself. Now, this is called the honesty program. You're asking criminals to be honest again, to say not to be registered to vote. You have to check that box, you see? And so now you've got, I mean, tell me if I'm wrong, Ben, but now it seems like from what we see reports here, there are millions of illegals now that are registered to vote in the state of California, and they keep denying it, the left does. Why is that?
Well, again, it goes back to votes. And in reality, I don't even think the Democrats want to fix the immigration issue. They use these people as pawns. They come out, they bring them out when they want to use them, and then they throw them back when they don't. And there is voter fraud rampant in California. The last estimate in the last election by a group called Voter Integrity Project said 3 million illegal votes. And that's the thing that people don't realize this. They pass driver's licenses for illegals, and they're automatically registered to vote, like you said. I mean, think about the undermining of America.
How do you feel, Agnes, about the wall and all of that? Is this something you think is needed in California?
Absolutely. Ben and I and a couple of other people and Don, my husband, went down to the border for a tour of the prototypes on January 16th.
Oh, did you?
Yes. It was absolutely an emotional
day. Did you pick your favorite out of all that, Agnes? Which one you like?
I have a couple favorite ones. Yes. But I nicknamed the wall Wall of Hope. And the reason for that is hope that no other American citizen is going to be killed by a person that should have never been in our country. Mm-hmm. And it is definitely needed because there are some areas down at the border in San Diego, the walls are very efficient, but there's an awful lot that is absolutely incredible how dilapidated the segments of the walls are. And some, there's like a 6 feet. We need to hire more border patrol agents, at least a minimum of 2,000, to just be where we used to be to enforce these. And you know, Malcolm, another thing I think that would probably work really well is I get asked all the time, well, what about the DACA? We don't need to do anything. Mm-hmm. Just stop giving them free housing or low-income housing, free education. Stop giving these children born to illegal aliens welfare, food stamps, and Medi-Cal, and all of that. Take all of that away.
It's a free ride.
They're eventually going to self-deport because we give them an incentive to come to this country because they get all the
freebies. That's a great point, Agnes. That's where we're aiding and abetting the whole system, and that's where the whole system is so corrupt. You bring up some really, really valid points. Listen, Agnes, the site again is fightsanctuarystate.com. Is that correct?
Yes.
Fightsanctuarystate.com. Yeah.
And donate and help. Anything, any amount would be helpful.
Right. Well, it always takes money to run these organizations. There's no doubt about that. It doesn't happen for free, right? And you have to remember, there are patriots like Agnes and Ben out there. And there are many of them, actually, that are trying to fight the good fight here. We'll see how this works out. We'll all be watching, and I'd love to have you both back again. You're so well-spoken about this. Again, Agnes Gibney and Ben Berquam, it's so good to have you both here on Viewpoint this Sunday here. Friends, coming up next is our panel discussion again on the FISA deal. Here we're going to take a look here on these possibly a second special counsel with all the FISA abuse here. What do you think about that? You have enough investigations yet? We may have another one here for you. Also, the updated job reports is out, and it looks really good. The economy seems to be ticking forward. That looks good. And the tariffs, they have everybody upset. The European Union come out and said, where's their exemption? Everybody's looking for an exemption, which, of course, defeats the whole purpose of the tariffs. Right? More Viewpoint in just a moment.
We are the vision of the voices. You can email us at talk@americaoutloud.com.
The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world, to unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. It's AmericaOutloud.com, where the conversation never ends. With 24/7 streaming on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio. We're back here on Viewpoint this Sunday here. Hey, so what do you all think about another special counsel? I know you haven't had enough fun yet, so you're up for some more here. Well, Attorney General Jeff Sessions has finally showed his hand a bit. We haven't seen that a lot from the Attorney General. He's been very much quiet, the Southern Alabama gentleman that people describe him as. He's not very outspoken, but he did come out, and he is starting to see a different Attorney General these days, with the suit in California, of course, with his mention about a possibility of a second special counsel, if you can believe that. And this is in regards to the FISA abuse. There's certainly and clearly enough evidence, and there's a lot of pressure right now in Congress to get this set up. Let's talk about that now, and we've got on the show here, George McClellan is here. George, well, he's a historian. He's a political analyst. His professional career spans 43 years in law enforcement in the U.S. Naval Investigative Service. Dennis Santiago is with us. He's a global risk and financial analyst. Again, you know, strategic warfare, asymmetric warfare, arms control, and global stability. Thank you both for being here for this discussion here. And let's start. I've got a whole bunch of topics I want to get through with you guys. Let's start with this FISA abuse, which clearly, I mean, I just throw a few names out there, all of you here. George, if I throw a few names like McCabe, Comey, Orr, him, his and her, Strzok, Page. I mean, there's a whole litany group of people here, which clearly there's the FISA abuse is becoming more and more clear and relevant. And you don't hear as much talk out of the Democrats and Adam Schiff these days. What do you think about the special counsel? Do you think Sessions will do it? Do you support it? Is it time for it? Or do we need to go another road here?
Well, you always like to ask for perspective. Let me give you a perspective. Mueller investigation, he is a special counsel, not a special prosecutor. Why? He's looking for a crime. You got to have a crime to have a prosecutor. He's looking for a crime. So they softened his role. They call him the special counsel. Mm-hmm. However, a second special counsel should be a prosecutor, because the DNC's crimes, the Clinton Foundation's crimes, mm-hmm. Hillary Clinton's crimes, Loretta Lynch's, Obama's, those are so apparent as crimes, they have to be prosecuted, not just looked at.
You know, George, you say something here that gets me thinking. I was just watching a report on CBS, actually. There's CBS News there, just in the previous hours here. And they were talking about the porn star there, Stormy. And they went, and I hadn't heard this before, but it did kind of wasn't really surprised, although they were saying that the special counsel will be investigating this as well. And they pointed out again that, you know, the special counsel obviously goes on a witch hunt and finds whatever. And back to you saying there really was no crime, or what are they looking for? This was a special counsel that was appointed really about a Russia election, meddling in an election, which was seemed to be a stretch when you see all of this Russia business from the left. But now he seems to be on a mission. It's almost like an Easter egg hunt and what the hell he's looking for here. But the CBS report went on to say that he's going to be looking at the Stormy business. And of course, they're all over this porn business is right up their alley, which is seems to be a pretty big distraction. Although the president doesn't look like his hands are totally clean here, George McClellan. But what do you say to that?
Well, Mueller's sole mission is to protect the deep state. So they'll go anywhere looking for anything. And you say, Stormy, what? What's her name? Who is she? What did she do? Nobody cares. Nobody right. cared about Clinton. Bill Clinton. Why should we care about what happened with our – we bought him. We know who he is. He's not hiding anything, and he's doing exactly what we wanted him to do. He's starting to drain the swamp,
right.
and he's rearranging politics in America.
Right, right. Well, and he also – Yeah, no, I hear you. I hear you. Well, and the only caveat, Dennis, to all of this, what George is saying is, you know, he's another politician who likes to have sex. So however that qualifies it, Dennis, that seems to be, you know, the talking point on a lot of the networks here. Do you see, Dennis, the special counsel dipping his foot into this whole business with, I'm just curious with this, as CBS was reporting, with this Stormy business, do you think this is just rhetoric for the media?
I think some of it's rhetoric for the media. They're hoping to extend the witch hunt. The Mueller investigation has basically meandered for so long now that it's kind of ineffective, right? I mean, you know, they're getting into smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller nits to the point that people are asking, why is that thing actually even still there? However, you know, you look at Jeff Sessions looking at the whole FISA thing, and he's going, you know, there's something in there. There's smoke. There's fire.
Right.
And I agree with George that there's enough there that something more prosecutorial is required. And I think that's a different person. I think you need somebody much more aggressive, somebody that is not investigating the periphery like Mueller is, but somebody that is investigating the very core and center of how the government got itself into this mess in the first place. And, you know, yeah, I can see the need for that, and then shutting down the other one as it just basically goes, you know what, we've dug that hole as deep as we really want to do as a country.
Yeah, no.
Common sense.
Common sense. Say much of that these days, George.
Common sense.
So let's say he does. Now, there was speculation on who that special counsel would be, and obviously there are a lot of people involved here. And again, you want to try to get somebody outside of this conversation and outside of the Beltway, which is always, preferential when you do these kinds of things versus someone like Mueller, again, who is so, you know, saturated in all this muck up there. Three names were put out. We put an unofficial poll out in social media. I want to share with you both now. And three names were thrown out that our producers said, okay, let's throw these three names out and see who might be our special counsel. So just play with me a minute here, George and Dennis, if you will. Let me throw you the three names. Chris Christie, Judge Napolitano there, the analyst thing that's always on the news program, the Fox News program, and good old Rudy Giuliani. Those three names were put out in a poll to say, okay, who would be an interesting, if you had to pick from those three, who would be a most interesting special counsel for this? I know who the social media people, they picked a winner out of those three. Who do you think won that poll, Dennis, and who would you pick?
Of those three names, I would pick Rudy Giuliani.
Interesting.
I think because he's a digger.
He's a digger.
And he focuses on targets.
All right.
Napolitano is popular, but know what? Right. You know, we're talking about digging into the government here. Okay. You need somebody that's been in there. So I'd say Giuliani.
All right, George, you know, I had to clean my ears a moment there. I thought he was going to say, and I really did, I thought he was starting to say that Giuliani was a dickhead. So I wasn't sure where he was going with that comment. But anyways, now that we got that clear, he's a digger, you say.
But it'd be an effective one. Come on.
I'm just saying, friends. I'm just saying, George. All right, so listen, he may be all of that, George. So who do you pick, George? Chris, Judge, or Rudy?
Of those three, I would pick Rudy Giuliani as well. Yeah. Because look what he did in New York City when he was mayor. However, the name not on that list was the U.S. Attorney for the Southern District of New York that Trump relieved, like he did all the U.S. attorneys, and replaced with somebody else. But that fellow had a reputation. He was pro-Trump, but he had a reputation of going after bad guys. And I cannot think of his name, but I think it was an Indian.
Okay. All right. All right.
Indian. And I cannot think of his name, but he had a wonderful...
It's all right. We'll make him a fourth person on the poll and just call him nameless here. All right. Well, let me tell you who won that poll. You're both spot on. Rudy Giuliani won by far and away that poll. Quite a few people answered the poll. I don't have the number right in front, but he won far and away from Chris Christie and Judge Napolitano. So it looks like you both were on it. So Rudy, and he would be kind of interesting for a lot of the reasons you put out there. He's a very interesting man, Rudy is. is, and I think a lot of Americans like him very much, appreciate him. He'd be interesting as a special counsel, I think you would agree. Well, listen, let's talk also. I want to talk to you about the school violence and the Governor Scott coming out. And he, so there were several things that were done. They raised the age from 18 to 21 with the sale of weapons because of the Parkland shooting event, the massacre that happened, killing 17 people in Parkland, Florida. So the politicians, I've never seen politicians move this fast to get some legislation in place for the governor to take a look at. We didn't quite, the governor never tipped his hand until he looked at all of the pieces here, and he did sign off on this, guys. So 18 to 21 is the first thing that happens, okay? There's a so-called guardian program put into place that enables school employees and certain teachers to carry handguns if they go through the proper training now as well. And there are other provisions like mental health programs. They're putting millions and millions of dollars in these mental health programs, about 60, 70 million, I believe, and to allow these TIPS, some sort of an identification line where the TIPS students can put them in play and they're pursued and followed versus all the TIPS that were ignored here, George, and all of this story here. George, you have a background in law enforcement. This is something you know that's near and dear to you. You understand this story here. How do you feel, because the NRA came back and sued on Friday afternoon, they placed a lawsuit in place, and this is not the first lawsuit they have. They put some other contest out there that they say it's against the Constitution to do this. Do you support raising the age, first of all, from 18 to 21 or some other age, and what do you think about this?
Well, I think it's not a bad idea, but it's not going to solve anything. What's the difference between an 18-year-old and a 22-year-old with going into a school shooting people up? Mm-hmm. That's not a solution. That is just a milksop to the people out here fearful of mm-hmm. of the young males with guns.
Right.
You know, I was 12 when I had my first 22 rifle.
Mm-hmm. 12?
12. Yeah, my dad got it. It was a Remington single-shot Remington 22, and I'll tell you what, I got more schooling from them and then the NRA program as a little boy.
Right.
I never, in all my years, I've never had a gun accident.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been around guns. I've carried a gun in law enforcement for 43 years.
Right, but I mean, that's your experience, but other people are, obviously there's other folks that don't see it quite that way, clearly. Dennis?
Yeah, because they don't have the experience, but they have
right.
What other people are telling them, and the other people telling them are the never gunners, and that's
exactly.
the progressives, and the progressives
exactly.
can't take over America if we're armed.
Dennis, talk to me here on Governor Scott's sign on this. Were you surprised at this, and what do you think about the age increase?
I'm not surprised at it. And you know, I'm like George, you know, I got my first one at nine.
Nine right? and 12. Guys, I was playing with Tonka trucks at 9 and 12. Come on, guys. You know,
look, it's not that uncommon.
G.I. Joe's.
It's not that uncommon. I mean, in urban America, it's people just because there's no places to go and shoot. It's hard for people to get introduced to this. There's a couple of things that I get out of this. This move from 18 to 21 is a reaction to the fact that the underlying thing is that people, young men and young women, do not know anything about firearms anymore, right? So the reaction there is, well, if they don't know anything, then just don't let them have it. In the old days, when George and I were growing up, and, you know, so obviously with those kinds of ages, we've been around a while, it was stuff that was transmitted to you as part of your cultural learning.
Right.
And we've lost that. And the fact that we've lost it, now we're using government to make up for the fact that we stopped educating people. I can
true.
See the NRA reacting to it.
Okay.
I do know that in some states, it's possible to raise ages arbitrarily
mm-hmm.
At the state level. In other states, there are constitutional provisions in those states to prevent that kind of thing
okay.
from happening. If you reach the age of majority, you get all of the benefits of the age of majority.
So, Dennis,
and
who wins
so
the suit here?
There's a debate.
Who wins the suit here, NRA or Scott and company?
I'm not sure who wins the suit. I think this is one of those things that goes all the way to the Supreme Court in terms of you know, because this is a fundamental right.
It is,
right?
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
you know, and so
you're right. They are saying, and it probably is going to go to the Supreme Court to be, because this is the first rumblings of this, but this isn't the last very clearly here. Well, listen, I'm glad that I was born after you two and that I didn't have that growing up experience here, maybe. So I'm a younger guy than George and Dennis. Good to know that, man. All right, here, let me talk to you both about the... very interesting, this report put out at the Supreme Court Justice. So Nevada Senator Dean Heller, so he predict that Kennedy is going to retire, he believes. He's predicting this now sometime around the summertime, and that he was caught on audio saying this in a report that Politico picked up. He says, and I quote, which I'm hoping will get our base a little motivated, because right now they're not very motivated, but I think a new Supreme Court Justice will get them motivated. George, what do you think about that story about Kennedy and the Supreme Court Justice and Heller saying they're not motivated?
Well, he's going to retire. Everybody's going to retire. Even the Ruth Bader Ginsburg, she's going to retire.
I'm not going to retire, George.
And they're going to do it within these next 7 years. Let me tell you, the Supreme Court's going to change. Who's going to replace Kennedy? How about Trey Gowdy?
Interesting. Yeah, a lot of those cats in Congress, there's a handful of them that are being positioned for roles like the Supreme Court Justice. He's one of the names being thrown around here. Do you think it happens this summer, Dennis, or no?
I don't know. I mean, you know, like these kinds of, it's very hard to tell when somebody mentions something like this, whether or not what their real motivation is, that they're worried that there's going to be a Supreme Court change on the horizon,
right,
or if they're just trying to rile their base up because they're kind of worried about who's going to turn out for the midterm. And this is a time of political optics, right? You know, so I don't know.
Yeah.
Mention of a guy extemporaneously saying, hey, you know, it'd be kind of fun to retire because I've been doing this for a while. Come on, you know, right. That's not the same thing as a formal announcement. So, I don't know.
We'll see.
Supreme Court justices tend to hang around forever.
Well, that's exactly it. And, of course, you know, they do. Many of them, I mean, they're there to the very end, and just like they do in Washington, in the political circles there very clearly. So it's hard to get anybody to move over. But sometimes fresh faces in these kinds of things can add a different perspective. Of course, you've got to make sure it's the perspective you want at the end of the day. Listen, I want to also give you a little perspective on the jobs report real quickly. The economy ticked up big time, friends. I mean, 313,000 jobs were added this past in the February report here that just came out here a couple days ago here. And we're talking here, the jobless rate held 4.1. That's the fifth straight month at that level. And this is really good news because all this surpassed expectations. And really, it's a jolt to the economy. And a lot of these tax things haven't even really kicked in yet. So this could be really good news and upset some of the economists who are predicting otherwise. But fascinating to see the economy tick up like this here. Well, listen, big, big thank you here again to Dennis Santiago, George McClellan, and all of our guests today on Viewpoint This Sunday. Friends, Viewpoint This Sunday again, you hear it, I want to remind you, at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time is always the live version on America Out Loud Talk Radio. But there's an encore later in the day at 6 p.m. If you miss it at 10, we're back there at 6 p.m. on America Out Loud Talk Radio. And again, it goes on demand. You can catch it on all the podcast networks worldwide. Sunday afternoon, typically in the 2 o'clock range, give or take. We thank you for being part of the America Out Loud story here. And always remember, please, that Viewpoint This Sunday will always deliver an honest analysis and opinions on all sides of the political aisle. We don't discriminate against an opinion. The main thing is we are always in search of the out loud truth.